initiates this petition and files it and says, hey, I was wronged. The sheriff should have allowed the concealed weapons permit. Once the proceeding starts, though, the sheriff has to come in with documentation as to the basis for the denial by a preponderance of the evidence. And the reason I bring that up, I'm a little concerned with this one line 27 on page 20 of this dash 8 version where it says, the petitioner's history and criminal record clearly and convincingly demonstrates that the petitioner currently acts in a manner that does not threaten the public safety or the safety of the petitioner or others. And we use clearly and convincingly several times. Clear and convincing evidence is a higher standard of proof than preponderance of the evidence. I'd like to go back to preponderance, which is, to use mental images, it's like the scale. Preponderance is whichever side has got a little more weight wins. Clear and convincing, you've really got to have a heavy thumb on that scale to win. But if I'd like to get the sense of the committee on that. My own feeling is to make it preponderance of the evidence, but burden of proceeding on petitioner, burden of proof once the proceeding initiates is on the government as to why they've denied the concealed weapon permit.
Mr. Mannix, the reason that there's a higher standard in there is that those are the provisions that apply to people who may have had a conviction, who may have been committed within the excludable time and are trying to get over that hump. And so the reason that the burden of proof is higher is because they are trying to get over the prohibition.
Is there another section in here that it has to do with just the pure denial of the concealed weapon permit on the... They're all in there.
Yes. See,
what if we...
Let me just review the list so that the committee's clear then. 3A, on line 25, page 20, is the prohibited person list for purchasing and obtaining a concealed weapon. So that's pretty clear. B and C is for someone who wants to basically say, I was disqualified, but I'm now qualified, and that would apply to both firearms and the concealed weapons. And then D is the issue of the reporting.
Well, then somehow, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we state these in the alternative, because some will apply sometimes, and I don't want to make it so hard to read through this that it would be an overwhelming lesson in English grammar to figure out what applies where, but... For instance, to me, it's significant, a significant distinction between the applicant who's been denied a concealed weapons permit coming in and saying, I don't understand this. I haven't done anything to cause me not to be eligible, and then the sheriff should be able to establish that there is a reason for non-eligibility. On the other hand, the guy's a convicted felon. He was convicted of murder 5 years ago, and for some reason he thinks that he ought to be given dispensation from the prohibition against the felon having a firearm. Then he has the burden by clear and convincing evidence of establishing that although I was convicted 5 years ago for some extraordinary reason, I should be allowed to have a firearm.
I think there's a different section that we... Do we have...
Well, I think a better example, Representative Mannix, Mr. Chair, would probably be the person who was convicted of driving under the influence.
Okay.
I mean, a more realistic example.
Oh, I was just giving an extreme.
Well, I realize that, but let's put it, putting in the realm of reality to play it out. I mean, I think that someone who would want to be petitioning under subsection B would be a person who, in fact, had been convicted of driving under the influence and wanted to get a gun and would have to go through this process.
Well, somehow, if we put in here, the word or might be the key, because right now it's not clear if these are all in the conjunctive or the disjunctive.
Mr. Chair, Representative Calhoun, let's say if counsel and I debated for 20 minutes where an or should go and ultimately decided that any place you put it made it more difficult to read, and we ended up just taking it out and putting
it
here again. And
line 24, relief may be granted when the appropriate following provisions have been met. Something along those lines. It just makes it clear that you don't have to meet all of them.
Okay. I can work on that. To put an or in got more complicated.
All right,
less
complicated, relief may be granted when the petitioner satisfies those of the following provisions which are applicable to the proceeding. Something like that makes it clear that, because some judge somewhere is going to read this law and say, well, gee, you have to meet all of these in order to get your concealed weapons permit.
Okay, I will work on that. It was an issue and a concern and one that we just couldn't come up with, so that's how we ended
up with the one suggestion I'd make on that, then.
Okay. I appreciate that.
I think we should also state it somehow.
Mr. Linden's got some suggestions, too, because we went round and round on the ors and the ands, and we just couldn't make it read real cleanly.
Well, then on the concealed weapon permit denial, I think we should still have a subsection that says, a separate section as to procedure that says, when the petitioner is simply challenging the denial of the concealed weapon permit or a refusal to authorize the purchase of a handgun under the 15-day waiting period, and they come back and say, we have a reason why you can't get this gun, he wants to challenge that, that under those circumstances, the petitioner has the burden of proceeding, but the denying authority has the burden of proof by a preponderance of the evidence that there is a legal disqualification.
Which is, as far as I can tell, not not unusual.
No.
We're not doing anything fancy.
No. Okay. I think you're being...
generous.
Common sense.
Redundant.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I think you're stating the obvious.
Some justice court judge who doesn't have to have even a law degree is going to pull the statute book and is going to read this. And I want that justice court judge to understand how to proceed.
I have to agree with Representative Mannix on this. I think that the way the law is currently stated, it places upon the petitioner the burden of showing...
On B and C, the burden is on the petitioner because they have been denied rightfully. And so in that situation...
Well, that's why I think there should be a separate section, not one of these subsections that says where there has been a refusal to authorize purchase of a handgun or denial of a concealed weapons permit, the refusing authority shall have the burden of establishing grounds for refusal by a preponderance of the evidence.
Well, the burden should just... I mean, I think that the easy way you handle this from a legal standpoint is just putting the authority that denied the permit or giving them the burden by preponderance of the evidence and then bug it out.
Right. If we just put in a provision to that effect,
Mr. Chair.
Lieutenant Clark.
Mr. Linden, that's not unusual, right? I mean, we're not creating headaches for anybody.
Not at all.
Okay.
And the legislature certainly can allocate the burdens of proof and persuasion.
Once the petitioner files their paperwork, the burden on the intent of the committee, I think, is to put the burden on the state to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the person does fall within one of the necessary categories to exclude the person.
Correct.
Okay, I think we pretty well got that down. And then also the other intent of the committee, and I'm not sure whether this is something that's typically put in statutory language or if it's just something that's assumed. But when they get into that justice court, it has to be the justice court judge or whichever judge it is that's at the trial level that is looking at the evidence, and then basically they're making the decision. They're making the decision that based on the evidence before them, the person has been appropriately excluded under one of the categories without any deference whatsoever to the decision of the sheriff. I don't think we bothered to put any language to that effect in the statute. I think that's just implied in this type of statute.
Because it's a court proceeding as opposed to administrative review.
Right.
That is, I think, self-explanatory.
I hope this isn't considered administrative review.
No. Okay. And the record will be very clear that it's not.
Okay. So we got those. Okay, the only other thing we have is that I can think of is there's the catch-all category from the original bill on people that would otherwise be appropriately excluded. However, the court decides to grant them relief from the disability under... similar to the Federal Act, and the committee had discussed that and wanting a section in the bill that would allow, that would each time the petitioner came in, if first of all, the state were to put on the evidence to show that by preponderance the person is appropriately excluded, the second route would be for the petitioner to say, okay, I'm appropriately excluded here, but I'm asking the court in its discretion to grant me relief from that disability and allow me to... of the original bill is the relief section that we were talking about plugging in. I think think we were talking about that. I know I was talking about that, but I think the rest of the committee was too.
Well, that language is not referenced in Section 10, though, which was the original review section.
Right, this is, I think this is the federal language. I think we wanted something in the state level that was akin to that, that gave our judges the right to say that, okay, you were appropriately excluded because of your mental problem, but the court, you've convinced the court that that problem no longer exists, and the court will give you, allow you to have the weapon.
That would be covered under either B or C.
Do you have that in the section here?
Yes. Yeah.
On page 20 at the bottom, is that what we're talking about? That's my understanding, Mr. Chairman.
My understanding is that either, I mean, you're going to be denied for either your history, your criminal history record, or your mental health record, because that's all that you would be excluded by, and this gives you the opportunity to say, even though that happened, I'm still entitled. I should still be able to have a gun now.
Okay, I see. Well, we've got kind of a problem because we're kind of mixing, I think these are distinct notions that the person's appealing on, and we're kind of mixing them together.
Well, based on Representative Kamanek's comments, what I'm inclined to recommend to the committee is that 3A be separated out, and then 3B, C, and D be set as a separate section.
I agree with that. That way it'll be clear that we're talking two different things, and then you can talk about the preponderance issue where it applies.
And then that would cover all of your, I know I was turned down, but I still want my, I still think so, I should have a gun language.
So the burden of proof then is to be on the state with respect to the first section with the reason for
get around the disqualification.
The other sections of the court would have discretion to.
Right.
And the only last thing that I have here, and I want to check and make sure with Mr. Lennon, make sure it's no problem. I think that we should have a section in the bill, in this relief section, making certain that the state is not allowed to appeal if it receives a disfavorable ruling. If you go into the JP, and the JP rules in your favor, the state should not be able to pull it up into the district court then and drag up the litigation. Only the petitioner should be allowed to appeal.
Mr. Chairman?
Maybe I might accept the legal merits on that, but not the discretion of the judge. Representative Mannix.
Are you presenting that as a conceptual amendment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I think I would, Representative Mannix. I think it might have been the sentiments of the committee, but I was hoping to throw that out at least for discussion and see if anybody has any problems with that.
Describe it again. Describe your conceptual amendment again.
We're basically
like
building
the
in.
The state can't appeal.
The state can't appeal. If you win.
Final order not appealable by the state, similar to a district attorney appeal.
Kind of like jeopardy.
And you have to call it. You'd have to call them final orders, I think. And then, am I correct? And then say that the state does not have the right to appeal a final order.
So if a court, if a JP comes out, if you're in applying for your permit, you get denied, the JP comes out and says, Mr. Clark, we're going to give you your permit. The state can't say, well, fine, Mr. Clark, we're going to drag this thing out then. Now we're going to go to the district. Now we're going to go to the district court and appeal. And if we lose there, then we're going to. Once the petitioner wins at any level, the petitioner has won, period. Now, of course, if you go up into the Court of Appeals, they'll just be sending it back down with legal instructions. But if you're in the JP, you shouldn't be allowed to appeal to the other.
Can we do that?
The answer, I think, is yes, but the question is, should we do that?
Does anybody think that's appropriate or inappropriate?
I'm a little nervous for reasons I can't exactly articulate.
Mr. Chairman? I would be opposed to that from the perspective that I think on balance, the government isn't out there usually harassing people like this. And the concern I have is you could have an aberrant justice of the peace or municipal court judge who just decided that this is give away the permit week and all you felons can come on in here and I'm going to dispense and forgive all of you for your past sins. I'm just throwing out the horror stories, And we would have just passed a law that says, well, that's okay. They can have it. I think that if there was a problem with a particular judge who was unfair the other way, the word will get around that community pretty fast, and the judge is going to hear from the community generally about community attitudes. This is a civil proceeding, and I think both parties ought to have an opportunity to seek review. I think we ought to be careful about limiting our language here, too, about appeals from district court shall go to the circuit court. Any further appeals shall be as in any other civil proceeding, because we suggested here earlier appeals of petition shall be heard de novo. There'll be some argument someday by somebody that you can even go to the Court of Appeals and represent your evidence.
London's going to be discussing that with Judge Joseph to come up with some.
But back to the chairman's proposal, I'm afraid I wouldn't be able to support that. I think that the appeals process ought to be two-edged there.
Representative Miller.
Yes, sir.
Any comments on that notion?
Oh, I don't think that. I think I have some confidence they'll make appropriate decisions.
My only concern, and maybe I can articulate this correctly, is since we're sending them into basically two separate courts, we're sending them first into JP or Muni Court, and then if they were to lose or win, they would get sent again to make a whole new record on the record in district court. It seems like the first stop for them, if the state is allowed to appeal, really doesn't get them anywhere at all if the state really wants to deny them a permit. So maybe we should send them directly into the district court in the first place, forget the informalities, put it on the record, and then if there's going to be appeal, you take it up into the Court of Appeals like a normal case. But it seems it might be spinning our wheels, or might be creating unnecessary work for the courts to send them into one court, when all you're going to do after that court is that either side, assuming that the petitioner has the resources, is going to appeal it to the next court to make a whole other record and try it again. A difficulty with the system?
Well, I see what you're talking about, but I would like to see it tried out for a couple of years to see if it turns out to be a real problem. If it did, we could amend the statute about the appeals process. But it's a fairly draconian remedy to say that the state can't appeal at some point. And the reason we have it this way is we wanted to emphasize informality, promptness. We were concerned about other courts' backlogs, and we wanted someone to get into the court real fast on the permit process. I think we could give this a try for a couple of years and see if there's a problem somewhere. I don't think there will be a problem, but we may find out there is.
Brian.
Yes, sir.
Any comments on that as a notion?
I'd be willing to give it a try. I was just asking counsel whether or not you could let the appeal right stay there, but limit it to that first circuit or district court level, so we don't protract it, but it does get it at least into a more, it assures that there's a more professional, court to hear it.
May I chime in on that? Mm-hmm. That I could buy. It's just stop the appeal at the circuit court level and say no further appeal. We can cut off appeals anywhere we want. And so if the state loses at circuit court, it's too bad. They've already been through it a couple of times. And I trust a locally elected circuit court judge to make the best possible decision.
Clark, any comments on this?
Well, I would be nervous about cutting off the appeal rights of the state, and I think as a practical matter, the law enforcement people would be nervous about that too. I think fiscally speaking, you're not going to have a lot of localities abusing the appeal right. There's a built-in incentive there, a built-in governor, which has to do with their budget. And so I'd like to see those two sides kind of treated equally.
Ask this would be, I guess, a sheriff's office that would have to be doing this.
Yes, sheriff's office would take it. In fact, under our, at least in the, I think the way our section 11 is written, at least in the court of non-record, the sheriff would be in unrepresented.
Yeah. On an appeal, the attorney for the sheriff's office is the attorney.
County council, probably.
our county council. So I guess what I'm saying, I agree with the comment of Representative Clark in terms of built-in governor. If it's a flimsy board or something like that, I have faith in the sheriff's offices not to pursue an appeal just to cause someone some trouble. Secondly, they would have to convince their district attorney to pursue it as well. Probably stop there anyway.
I have a question. Thank you for that conversation, Brian. I have a question. At our part, it talks about without appearance by attorney, and I'm wondering if that applies only to our courts and non-record, or if it also applies to district court.
Well, it's discretionary, and it would be either. And it's a discretionary provision, if I'm not mistaken. May appear, so it's discretionary. So at that point, it's probably going to be fiscally and I think time decided. That was not very articulately placed, but.
Committee, you might take a look at this on line 22 of page 20. My reading of that line says that the discretion is in whether or not they appear at all, not in whether or not they appear with an attorney. Am I reading this funny, or?
My reading, Mr. Chairman, was that they could appear themselves without having an attorney appear, despite the requirement normally that anyone other than someone appearing on their own behalf as a person had to appear by attorney. The intention was the sheriff could show up without having to have the county council or the DA come in.
Exactly. And that's what the intent of the, and this is word for word out of some other place, and that's exactly what it's there for.
I think we've clarified that for the record, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. I wonder what would the committee think of appearance so that in the court of non-record, the state not appear with any counsel shaking her head.
I don't think you can do that. I think you have a little discretionary wrong question.
You can't require someone not to appear for their attorney.
I would think we could, since these are counties are basically local agencies of the state, we could probably require them to do about whatever we want from the state.
There's some provisions in ORS 9 that have to do with appearances of council and cities and counties and et cetera, and it would be my advice to the committee that we not gummy it up at this point, to quote Representative Bryan, leave that in and see what happens.
From the other direction, the only last concern I would have and I want to raise counsel, I know when you drafted this it was perfect, but we're going to look at it anyway now. Come on now. The last issue I want to raise is if the state takes the appeal and if the state's wrong, so that at any level the petitioner prevails in the justice court and the state loses, should the state then have to suffer the consequences of paying for the...
Chair, members of the committee, in the way that this is drafted, if that were the case, at least at the first level, the filing fee would be returned to the petitioner. So if you want that on that, it would not be difficult to do so.
Well, what we're saying then is if the petitioner get their $25 filing fee back.
State, if the law enforcement agency appealed that prevailing decision, then that's where you would put it. I'm already noting that committee has moved, taken a step in that direction.
Where's our section on that, counsel? I missed
page 21 of the amendments.
Page 21, line 7.
We try to keep the filing fees down, and we said if you win, you get it back from the loser.
Did the committee also think it was appropriate to require them to return the application fee if they lost?
I thought we decided against that, Mr. Chairman, last time. On the basis
Clark?
That the cost was the cost.
I thought that's what we decided.
Against or for?
In favor. Well, what? Against or for what?
Just making them return the application fee.
I had the permit, and then they lost an appeal.
Mm-hmm. committee decided to not return the application fee because at that point the fee would have already had, the fee goes to the processing and the application would have had to have been processed. So there was, it didn't.
I think that's right.
That was the rationale of the committee was that that money was spent.
We wanted the filing fee treated as a normal court cost.
Correct.
On the attorney fee side, Mr. Chairman, I'd be willing to say that either side that loses would have to pay the winning side's attorney fee.
We know how those all their purse and everything else, we could be in a lot of trouble there. What's the committee sentiments on that? Representative Miller, I know, expressed some concern to me that maybe if it's taken up, that there should be attorney's fees. Good, bad, and different, at the least.
Chair.
Representative Clark.
We've been through this once before in this bill, having to do with attorney fees in one section. Compiling records, the civil rights violation section. But it seems to me that this is a little bit different. And I'm trying to think about what I can remember from the Administrative Procedures Act and when an appeal from an agency gets you attorney fees. Mr. Linden.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, there's no hard and fast rule on appeals from administrative agencies. If we're treating this as similar to an appeal in a civil case, the court has, you know, can be given authority to designate a prevailing party and to award cost disbursements and attorney's fees as the court sees fit. That would be the most general way of granting that authority. We could, with counsel, go look at the different twists on attorney's fees that we find in the administrative area and perhaps find one that would be appropriate.
Here's my concern, Mr. Chair, is that if the first appeal into the court system is de novo and the court comes to a different decision than did the agency in this case, the law enforcement office, that decision, it seems to me, by the court is a brand new decision. And reasonable people can disagree on the same set of facts, and you would in fact be penalizing, it seems to me, the law enforcement agency. In other words, if the standard of review were very narrow into the district court or the municipal court, then it would make sense to award attorney fees on an appeal, it seems to me, because you'd basically be saying the agency was so wrong, the agency was bad wrong here. But when you've got a more open-ended kind of review, you're basically saying, hey, judge, if you disagree with the agency, that's fine. Substitute your judgment for that of the agency. You owe no deference to the agency at all. You just make the decision brand new. It seems to me to put the law enforcement people in a little bit of a catch-22 by saying, you go ahead and make the decision, but if a judge decides differently from you, not on a limited question of law from a standpoint of an appeal, but just simply on the same facts, just decides differently from you, you're going to have to pay the attorney fees for that appeal. It seems to be a little harsh to me.
Make any difference if, they brought it up once into the justice. Into district court, and the district court says they're wrong. Does that make any difference? Where two reasonable people have said that they were wrong. I'm wondering if we limit it to cases where the state.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Mr. Chairman, in regard to attorney fees, I think we should remember though that we bent over backwards to come up with a procedure here to get someone into judicial review so that they would not have to have an attorney. If we start talking about awarding attorney fees, I can just see the ads now on television. Hi, I'm John Smith. Hire me anytime you've had your gun permit denied, and I bet you John Smith, one time out of 10, will find a sheriff in some rural community who's screwed up, and he'll get it turned over, and he'll suddenly come in with 10 billable hours and ask for $1,000 in fees and blow away some county budget if that happens often enough. What I'm coming at this, if the people are wrong in the local community, I think there should be a judicial process to remedy the wrong.
I'm not suggesting that our brothers at the bar would in an unprincipled way, advertise their services.
Not in an unprincipled
Mr.
way.
Chair,
they do it in a principled way. They make
Chair,
a hell of a lot of money.
I declare a potential conflict of interest at this point.
But what I'm getting at is this. You're creating a situation where you're going to make it a more litigious process. You're going to suck attorneys into it. The sheriffs will stop appearing. They'll start sending in county council. County council will throw up his hands and send in the deputy DA. And we'll soon start budgeting indigent defense-type money for gun permits. We'll have... But, Mr. Chairman,
cats and dogs will be living together.
I have an alternative. I do think we could put a provision in here that says if the court finds that either party proceeded unreasonably, then the court may award attorney fees against the other party. The reason I say that is some joker who's a felon is going to start, and we see this right now with post-conviction relief, we see it with habeas corpus, somebody in the prison who absolutely supposed to be there forever, we'll start petitioning the court, and at some point, the Supreme Court finally said in the United States at some point 183 habeas corpus petitions was enough. I'd like to at some point say to the guy, hey, look,
I think since what
we're doing is, nobody knows how to do this. You know, as far as I know, we've never put together an appeal procedure in this state for denial of gun permits before under House Bill 3470. It's the first time we've done this. And the procedures themselves, it seems to me, need to work for everybody. And I would want to know what the Sheriff's Association thinks about this proposal before I'd feel comfortable voting yes on it, given what Sheriff Burks has said. I agree with Representative Mannix that other places in the bill, we may have a parting of ways philosophically, but when we're talking about procedures, they need to work for everybody. And so I think I'm going to...
Well, may I?
Sure.
The only objection I heard was more of authority structure as to whether or not the sheriff's authority is being subject to municipal court review, and I'd say the same is true any time that, well, and I see that as more of a concern about the authority structure rather than a procedural problem. I think we would take care of the procedural problem by what's just been proposed. On the other hand, this issue, we also discussed all of these things last week, and we haven't had feedback until now. Granted, the printed amendments weren't prepared either. And we've got to move somehow, somewhere.
Counsel, let me bring you up to speed here. We just hit a roadblock, and that is they have to drive out to the rural parts of their area, counties, to go to JP and many court hearings. Or even if they have to attend them by telephone. So we've got to come into a little, we set up a beautiful little system, or so we thought, and landmine. We just stepped on a landmine, so we're stuck now.
I don't think, I think we should just go forward.
Members of the committee, I think the policy issue is this. The committee originally wanted things to be as dispersed and as available to the petitioners, and were prioritizing at their time access to the courts by the citizens of Oregon who wanted guns. That has to be counterbalanced with whether or not the potential and I think perceived burden, and it may not end up being a significant burden, to the law enforcement agencies that have to defend these, how you balance giving access to the courts to the perceived potential impact that it may have on the sheriffs. They are not necessarily divergent policy decisions, but that's the two directions that you go. Clearly, one avenue, if you want to minimize access, is to put them all in the district courts. But the committee was very clear in their initial discussions that they wished, and the member, everyone in this room heard those initial discussions, that they wanted this to be as localized as possible.
And I mean, the committee's gone full circle, but I think that the initial decision of the committee was very strongly in favor of local court access.
Chair.
And so
there's some,
always a balance.
Someone has an idea.
I don't think it's going to work.
Somebody with an idea. You don't stand a chance in this room. Come on up here and tell us what you got.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Major Renfro, Criminal Investigation Bureau, State Police. And I just had an idea that occurred to me that could resolve this. It's broken down into two parts. One would be the gun permits, which will go through the sheriffs exclusively. The other are the gun transactions or the purchases that will go either through the sheriff or through the local municipal police department, depending on where the particular resident lives that purchases the weapon. I would propose that all of the permit issues go through the sheriff's office and ultimately through the district court, the state court and county court. The gun transaction issues go through the police department or the municipal court. And I think it would be much based upon where the resident or the purchaser lives. It would probably be split pretty much equally as to what issues would be addressed in which court.
Okay, Representative Maddox, would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
Yes.
That's basically what we've done.
No, I don't think
not clearly. We've said it could go either way. Now we're saying it has to go one way or another. You go to district court. If it's the sheriff's denial of authorization of the permit, you go to municipal court. If it's the police refusal to authorize the purchase of the weapon. Mr. Nicholson has a comment.
Mr. Chairman, if I could clarify that even one step further, Sheriff Burks, for the record. I don't have any problems on the gun application, the little duplicate slip that goes to the local police. And in some cases, but that's going to be pretty rare, it will go to the sheriff in the rural areas. Now, in the metropolitan areas, it's going to be quite a few that comes into the sheriff. I don't have any problem with those being heard in municipal. It's the gun permits that I have a problem with. I would like that in the district court, as suggested by Major Renfro.
So, Counsel, if that, Ms. Nichols, can you please comment?
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols again. I don't know, perhaps a little background of what the working group did or anticipated. As I recall, what we really were aiming at, and I don't know whether it's practical under the rules of the court or whatever, but the person who was denied a concealed weapons permit, the first application procedure would be to go file a form with the court. The judge would call everybody in, and they'd sit around maybe in his chambers and have coffee, and they'd say, okay, what's the problem, and let's settle this in 10 or 15 minutes, and something real informal like that. But we did anticipate it would be with the district court or the circuit court rather than with the municipal court. I don't recall we ever discussed municipal courts in the working group. So,
well, then you have
and
no
I don't
problem.
Know whether that's practical or not under the rules of the court.
Mr. Chairman.
Max.
To get this moving, I perceive no problem then with this proposal, and that is that the denial of the purchase is something that will go to municipal court. The denial of the concealed weapon permit will go to district court. In both instances, we're talking about informal procedures. We can forget about this grouping business. Just drop all of that. Just go with Major Renfro's proposal. Are we dropping Justice Court entirely from this process or leaving them as an alternative municipal court where there is no...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Maddox, I think you should leave the Justice Court in there.
Justice or municipal court?
Yes.
So that's my proposal. Justice or municipal court where you can't purchase, or district court where it's concealed weapon denial. But Mr. Linden wants to comment, Mr. Chairman.
I'd want to look at the language of how this would be accomplished, but my only concern just at first blush is that if we've got, you know... Are we going to give a special class of litigants, number one, a break on the amount of money it costs them to get into the state court system? And secondly, are we going to give them a priority on the docket over other classes of litigants and whether or not those two issues ought to appropriately be done?
Mr. Linden, what is a small claims court filing fee generally for district courts?
One moment, bear with me. Small claims, the plaintiffs.
$25, I think.
I think it varies from county to county.
It's the base fee is $22, and then if you add on law library and legal aid, well, it depends on whether or not the county has a law library fee, but you're probably on the average up in the low 40s with legal aid and law library.
What if we said $40 on the concealed weapon permit and $25 on the other? And there'll be no law library, there'll be no legal aid fee to be exempt from that because legal aid doesn't come in on this one.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, then you ought to leave it at the base filing fee if you're going to exclude the possibility of assessing the law library.
Or do you want to leave the assessments in?
Pardon me?
Do you want to leave the assessments
in? Well, this is just, as far as I'm concerned, to be just another case coming to the court, and those if those assessments apply elsewhere, why not apply here?
All right, just district court filing fee. Mr. Chairman, I would amend the proposal to say $25 in municipal court or justice court. If you go in district court, you pay the district court filing fee. But they're going to get it back when they win their case. And we're also going to give them attorney fees in a minute.
We have to make that clear. I kind of want to give the person the first shot appeal at $25 regardless of where they live. I hate to pick on those people from Portland.
Well, they get it back if they win. So if there's merit to their cause, they're going to get it back.
Chair, I think I think we're trying to make too many trade-offs here. Someone's going to go into court and they're going to appeal, then that costs the system a certain amount of money. There's waivers for indigency. I mean, there's all kinds of provisions that we make for hardship cases, and I assume that there's no reason that those wouldn't apply here right now. Counsel, is there some reason?
Ms. Warren and I are both squinching our eyebrows. It would seem to me you'd almost have to make a specific statement that they would, wouldn't you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, and counsel, I'm not sure how that would work. I suppose that a person, like in any civil proceeding, could petition the court to waive or defer the fees in this as just in any other matter. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see why not. And so you can't make the argument that this is going to be hard on everybody because the harder it is, the more likely it is that they're going to be able to get a waiver of fees. Everybody else is coming into the court system, and we got a whole lot of strain on our court system right now. And I guess I feel like if the appeal, if they're going to get the money back if they win. I don't want to flood the courts with litigation either. I think a normal filing fee will help.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's my proposal anyway.
Counsel, can you restate Representative Mannix's?
All denials of purchases will go into municipal or justice courts with a $25 filing fee. Denials of concealed weapons licenses will go into district court with a fill-in-the-blank fee.
Normal.
No, with at the regular at the regular filing fee.
That's what I have written down, regular filing fee.
Question.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a question here. On the carrying a concealed weapon process, you go into district court first. Is it anticipated that you then appeal to the Court of Appeals de novo?
We are going to say circuit court.
Stick with the appeal process.
Which is unusual compared to the way the other appeals are.
That's the same issue. We got to talk to the judge Joseph about that. What
else? That's it.
Call the question.
All right.
Any rebuttal or questions or sentiments on that?
Is the issue of the first appeal and attorney's fees been resolved?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, so we're just sticking with this.
Okay, we're sticking with this for now. Okay. Okay, I'm going to object to this change, so we'll have to vote on it. Are there any comments?
So we're just bifurcating the system, basically. Got it.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bryan.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Chair Calhoun.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
Motion carries.
Representative Mannix.
I move that we further amend the bill to provide that appeals from district court shall go to district court where review will be de novo.
Appeals from which court?
From district court.
You didn't mean
circuit
that.
Court.
Did I say district court to circuit court?
You said district court to district court.
I'm sorry. District court to circuit court where review will be de novo. That means a review of the whole record anew. And appeals from justice court and municipal court will, of course, be to district court where review will be de novo.
Representative Mannix, if you turn to the bill, if we take page 21, lines 10 to 13, if we bifurcate this to match what we've just done, is that your amendment, basically?
Right.
Okay. See, let me see if I can point somebody.
I don't know if we need an amendment to do that.
The reason, before that we had people appealing from Uni Court.
I just want to make sure we were doing the same thing.
The reason before we had somebody appealing from Uni Court or JP Court into District Court was because you don't have any record in Muni or JP. So you can't, there's no way to make an appeal into the Court of Appeals or Supreme Court. That purpose is defeated if we're starting in District Court. So there's no reason that I can see to have them appeal from District Court into the Circuit Court, into the Court of Appeals, into the Supreme Court.
Well, the only reason, Mr. Chairman,
nice.
My only reason was, one, you're sticking with a local judge with a local availability, and you're still outside of the heavy brief writing requirements of going to the Court of Appeals. If you feel like it's important to have it go straight from district court to the Court of Appeals, that's the way other civil cases are heard. But I was trying to make it more local by saying if unlike other cases in district court, it'll go to the circuit court for de novo review. So the person can go in and see the circuit judge informally.
Everybody understand that, the Representative Mannix's motion? I object. Does anybody else object to it? We'll just note my objection for the record. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Following up on your earlier comment, I move that we amend the bill to provide that should the government appeal from an order allowing the purchase or the concealed weapon permit, and should the appeal lose, that is, should the government's position lose, that the government will pay any attorney fees, may be ordered to pay attorney fees to the petitioner.
We're making this discretionary with the court.
Some reason that I know we had this discussion 30 minutes ago about whether the attorney fee provision should go both ways. Did we decide that issue already?
We haven't decided it yet, but this one would only go in one direction. So I think that's correct. Statement of your motion.
I've decided that we're going to give this a shot, and I think Representative Miller's position is one that I'm going to go along with on this one. And everyone's had their shot, and then the state's unhappy, and they go up, and they're not able to turn it around. For at least 2 years, I'm willing to say the government will pay attorney fees. If the other side had an attorney and the judge decides to award them, I think if the judge decides it's a close call and, gee, I'm saying may rather than shall. But then the judge would be authorized to say, you really got screwed by the government here, and I'm going to give you attorney fees.
Chair.
Mark.
If that's the case, then I guess I would propose perhaps a friendly amendment to the mover's motion.
Please go ahead, and we'll I can hear it, and we'll just state it and zip right by
him.
We'll help.
And that would be that since the thing is going to be discretionary, that we simply use the phrase prevailing party. Since it's going to be discretionary with the court, if the court decides that someone has appealed in a frivolous manner, or that the government's denial or appeal was frivolous. I have tremendous faith in the wisdom of the judge in dealing with attorney fee provisions, and I would just like to see the phrase prevailing party used if the whole thing is going to be discretionary.
Representative Mannix, are you going to accept that as a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
You want to give that to me again?
use the phrase prevailing party, leave the award of attorney fees discretionary with the court to the prevailing party.
Since we'll take that. I'm going to accept that motion right after we accept Representative Clark's motion, because I think Representative Clark was first and he had a little.
No, excuse me.
I will first take Representative Miller's motion, and if it passes, we're stuck with it, and if it doesn't, we'll go on to the next motion.
If state, can I have
Are there any objections to Representative Miller's motion?
Yes. Somebody, can you restate Representative Miller's motion?
Any level, I think he's we're excluding the shot where the we're excluding the first shot where the person died and then wins on appeal. So only if the state appeals from there. Anytime the state appeals and loses, the state wouldn't get stuck on the first prong because the state wouldn't be appealing, the petitioner would. But if the state lost there and then appealed,
then the state sense? Is the governmental body.
Governmental body or the agency of the state.
How does that? How does that?
Entity.
How does that coincide with what we just talked about? Using the phrase prevailing party.
It's a previous motion that actually is being reinserted before you.
Oh, okay.
Maybe while you're out of the room,
okay,
it hasn't been considered.
Which would make my motion sort of moot.
Depends what happens with his motion.
No, I understand. Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
And the reason that Mark, is we've had recent testimony that mistakes aren't going to be made, so this really isn't going to impact people very much. Governmental units won't be impacted negatively much if this was passed. And secondly, at least my own opinion is that people who will proceed lawfully through all of this likely to prevail. The folks who want to get their firearms in the usual manner and use them unlawfully aren't going to read this bill.
Comments on the proposed amendment? I would only point out that this is only basically saying
step two.
We're basically saying we're playing poker, and if you want to bluff, you're going to have to pay.
Step two then.
Yes, this is step two, not the first step. That's correct, Representative.
Look for Representative Miller to confirm that. Is that true?
It is only the second step because we're saying whenever the state appeals.
Appeals
and the state would not be appealing in the first step because...
Sure, because they've denied.
So it would only be the second step. Representative Mannix.
My only comment is I prefer Representative Clark's version, so I'm going to vote against this version.
All right. Any other comments? Clerk will call the roll.
Yes.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Okay, I think, are we done with appeal, counsel?
For tonight, I hope so.
For tonight? We got the one.
Yeah,
do we still have the Judge Joseph question?
Or do Mr. Chairman, I think that? We do, because we now have... two different ways of doing it, but that both potentially could end up in the Court of Appeals, and we need to have language that would define the scope of review at that level.
Chairman, I move that any appeals to the Court of Appeals be based on the standard civil case scope of review, not the de novo standard of review.
Any objection to that motion? Which was basically going to be, it's going to be a legal review and not a factual review by the Court of Appeals.
What about the issue of attorney's fees?
It still carries. Anytime the state's appeals and gets stuck, they're stuck.
Okay.
Okay. Any objection? No objection? Is that going to satisfy that concern?
Mr. Chairman, I believe so.
Okay. We might check our language because we could still foul it up.
May we clarify one thing, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
I understand under Representative Miller's amendment that means the state finally did not prevail. Let's say the state goes into municipal court. The municipal court... says, oh yes, this handgun should have been this sale should have been allowed. So you go to district court, state goes to district court says, that's right, this should have been allowed. Then you go to circuit court, and circuit court says, you guys are all wrong. The state's position was correct. And it's whenever the final decision is made that you go back and determine whether or not attorney fees are paid. not each step of the process. You know, you don't pay each time you lose. And I assume it's the standard approach where it's the final decision that determines whether or not you won or lost. And then you pay for all the way through the process.
It's Representative Miller's motion.
Well,
good.
All right. The petitioner goes to municipal court. Municipal court overturns the state's decision. There's no appeal yet. State appeals from municipal.
Says what?
Says this. You can have it. The state was wrong in saying you couldn't buy it. Then you go from municipal court to district court. The state brings an appeal. I'm saying the state here for simplicity. District court overturns and says that the municipal court was wrong. Now, first of all, that's let me back up here. I'm trying to show the state is appealing from municipal court to district court. Say that they lose on the appeal to district court. So they've lost once and they're liable for attorney fees. But they choose to then appeal to circuit court. Circuit court overturns district court, so state ultimately won. It'd be my interpretation under standard legal interpretation that, well, then that means the state doesn't pay for any of it. If the state lost, on the other hand, they pay for both levels. Would that be correct?
I think that's correct.
Thank you.
Be my intent.
Tell you what, I think somebody has to make a phone call, so we're going to... We're going to take a 5-minute, and this is really a 5-minute recess.
How late are we going tonight, Mr. Chairman?
It's a good question.
It's right.
If I knew the answer to that, I probably wouldn't be here. So.
Had we considered a dinner break and then reconvening if it's going to be more than half an hour or 45 minutes? Some of us have been in hearings all day.
What's the committee sentiment? I don't want to make this harder. We at least have one person who's come quite a way, so I want to handle that person from the psychology profession. But what's the committee sentiment? If we have to, we can try to set up another one and come back 24-hour notice and come back again on this.
Maybe we can just take testimony, and then.
I mean, for instance, if we're going till 10 o'clock, I'd like to suggest a break for half an hour. If we're going to 8 o'clock, I say 5 minutes and plow on through.
Does anybody have a problem working till 10 tonight? I know that some people have quite a ways to go home.
I do.
It's a little late. Got to be back here. So.
I do. Mr. Chairman, let me tell you the reason why I do. I don't think we're being very productive. I think we'd be far better off to come back, try again on a Wednesday morning, try again Friday morning. I look at the pace we're moving and how many times we've gone in a circle here. I'm not sure we're doing very good work, frankly.
Well, it's not speedy work, but what we had, and I might point out what we had in the dash sheet amendments was going to make the sheriffs jump off board.
Oh, I understand. No, I understand we're working with real stuff. I'm just saying I don't think we're necessarily doing our best work right now.
I'll tell you what, given all those sentiments, I'm just going to keep going, and let's get the psychology people up here, and we'll. We're just going to move through some of this bill and get more productive, and then we'll come back.
Make a phone call, right back.
Bill on the dash head amendments, we've made significant progress.
We're going to do it my way.
Are you going to take a 5-minute break or not?
Let's bring them up, and we'll.
The letters have been distributed.
Let's just bring them up, and we're going to try to get through their portion of it at least, so we're through the stuff we have to get done, and then we'll come back to it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, five minutes would be greatly appreciated.
We've got such strong sentiments of the committee for 5 minutes. We're going to take a 5-minute recess and come right back.
Raining?
Okay, we've got. I was going to have counsel take us through what we did last time, but since he's not here, we're just going to go without her. If you can outline specifically the problems you have with the section, I think. Does everybody remember what we did last time? What our with respect to how we were going to handle the psychological problem section of
We narrowed it, if I recall.
Narrowed it
substantially.
Substantially. And we still have some, I think we did, but we came out better, but not perfect, so we still have some difficulties. Please state your name for the record and tell us what you have to say.
I'm Joseph Bloom. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm chairman of the psychiatry department at the medical school. and I'm here today representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. I know that you're operating under a big time crunch here, and just to make it a little quicker for you, I did send a letter to Speaker Katz a few days ago, which you now have a copy of. And in the letter, I outlined a little bit about my background. I outlined the fact that this bill in the area of mental illness has tremendous potential in terms of stigmatizing a whole group of mentally ill people who are not dangerous, never have been dangerous, and probably never will be dangerous. So the issue of stigma is extremely important, and it comes at a time when, as you know, the state of Oregon and most states nationally are trying to push for deinstitutionalization, and reinforcing the stereotype of dangerous mental illness is something that I think we should be very, very careful about. I gave you a one-paragraph review of the psychiatric literature on the dangerousness of mental patients, and basically what it says is that since the mental hospitals have been virtually, since the populations of the mental hospitals have gone down dramatically, there now exists in society a group of people who have a history of both mental illness and dangerous behavior. But to see all mentally ill people, or potentially all mentally ill people, under this framework is, I think, a major problem.
Can I ask a quick question on
sure.
that?
Sure.
Please, Representative Mannix.
What do we do with the prior commitments? Let's say we just adopt your proposal and say from now on, whenever a judge makes a commitment, he has to say this person should not be able to have a gun.
Yes.
But we've got prior commitments where these determinations were never made. Should we just say, well, for the past, we're going to have an assumption that the prior commitment was a no-gun commitment, but the person can overcome that, but for the future, we'll have this clear record? Do you have a suggestion
well,
on that?
Well, I mean, my suggestion would be to start with the present and build your cases forward rather than applying it retrospectively to a very large group of people, as I've outlined in the letter. So, I mean, but what you're proposing is certainly reasonable. You eventually, if you put everybody in it in the past, and I think you have to really look at your 10-year limit. I don't know why you have 10 years for someone in a civil side and 4 years for someone who's got a dangerous misdemeanor, but I think either way, but I think to get, well, let me just move to that
sure.
section.
All right.
For Section 2, which I gather is now Section 3, what we're proposing is that the trial court judge